Cape Cod Baseball League has been around for more than a century, but in the past decade or so, it's really become a hotbed for professional prospects. Major League scouts can be seen prowling around the diamonds, and players from Nomar Garciaparra to Mo Vaughn and Jason Varitek have all taken their swings here. And somehow, the Cape League has maintained its quaint charm and family atmosphere. Steve Weissman is an author. He has written a book about this special summer experience, and he's our guest today in studio. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Now, beach chairs and baseball bats, a celebration of the Cape Cod Baseball League. It's a great title, and I think it really sums up for whoever's ever attended a Cape League game what this special experience is all about. But why don't we first talk a little bit about how you discovered the Cape League?
Entirely by accident. My wife, who at the time was my fiance, she was a longtime Cape fanatic. I actually grew up in New York, so I was unfamiliar with the territory. We were on our way to Chatham for dinner. Drove past a brightly lighted field. She's as much of a baseball nut as I am, so I said, oh, I'll sit for a few minutes and watch. It was a beautiful night. The grass was this incredible green. And here were these players, clearly superior in skills, but we had no idea what we were looking at. Is this Legion Ball, high school? Well, they're too old for high school. Lo and behold, turns out to be the Chatham A's in the Cape League.
And that was the first time?
That was the first time.
And you've been watching it for how long?
Since. That was the late 80s.
Wow. And so over the time, you must have decided that this is something that you wanted to share, and along comes this book.
Well, yeah. It's something that I talk a lot about, as anyone who knows me will attest to, that baseball is one of my favorite subjects. I can't play, but I can talk a really great game. Going to games, my son's done the week-long clinics that the teams run, which are a fabulous experience. And you hear questions in the crowd. Oh, where do the players come from? Oh, they go to college. Oh, they live with host families. That's interesting. How does that happen? And over the years, I realized I knew a lot of the answers to these and thought, well, as much as anybody else, I'm equipped to write it down, so why don't I go ahead and do that and dig for the answers where I don't know?
I think that's a great idea. And, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about your book, and we were just talking about this off the air, is you have a picture of the championship trophy from the Cape League, and it's sitting next to the World Series trophy that we all know the Red Sox won last year. And you make mention in the caption that 11 former Cape Leaguers helped the Red Sox win the World Series. Mark Bellhorn, Nomar Garciaparra, Dave McCarty, Kevin Millar, Doug Mirabelli, Bill Miller, Mike Myers, Earl Schneider, Jason Varitek, Scott Williamson, and Kevin Youkilis. So this is really becoming a proving ground, I think, for a lot of professional prospects.
Oh, absolutely, and has been for a good long time. Since the league switched back from a short foray into the world of aluminum bats, and this also goes back to the 80s, scouts universally have regarded this as the premier summer league. There are other summer leagues now that are using wood bats, but for a lot of reasons that begin with the quality of play and perhaps finish with the proximity of all the fields to one another, this is where the scouts want to be. There's no question. They told me that time after time after time last summer. It's a good gig for them.
Sure. Well, talk a little bit about the difference between aluminum bats and wood bats. I'm sure a lot of people are unfamiliar with the differences.
Well, the materials are so different that the bats behave and perform differently. Pretty much the entire barrel of an aluminum bat is a sweet spot, which means it's the point at which you want to hit the ball for maximum trajectory and velocity outwards. Wood bats, the sweet spot is much smaller, so it takes a good deal more skill and discipline to learn how to manipulate the bat to get the desired result with wood than aluminum. Because colleges have used aluminum for so long for cost reasons, because they don't break, it's a very different game in the college ranks than in the pros. The Cape League sits squarely in between. It's a great proving ground, not even so much for skill level, but the scouts want to see how the players adjust to the wood bat. One of the managers joked with me recently that, you know, welcome to the Cape League, where even the best hitters hit 180. And there's no shame in that here. It's a very different game until the adjustments are made. And that's really as much as anything, as I say, what scouts are looking for. How mature is this player? Because once they make the professionals, it's wood bat all the time. It's a lot of games. The college system is such that you don't play anywhere near the number of games they play here on the Cape in a similar number of days. So they also want to get a sense of endurance.
You know, one thing that is clear, that the talent is tremendous here in the Cape League, and you have a quote. It's actually an exchange between two players, Mike Costanzo of the Hyannis Mets and his teammate Chris Robinson. And Costanzo says, "We're playing against major leaguers, and we don't know it yet." And Robinson responds, "No, we're playing against Hall of Famers, only we don't know it yet." So really, it's a tremendous amount of talent that's attracted to the Cape League.
It's the real deal. Just in the book alone, which was researched primarily last summer, at least in terms of the on-field activities go, 25 guys that got coverage in the book in some fashion or another were drafted in this year's draft about a month ago. And as of last week, 13 of those had signed professional contracts. Wow. And are somewhere on a minor league roster.
Wow. Can you imagine that? We're talking Cape League Baseball with author Steve Weissman. He's written a book called Beach Chairs and Baseball Bats, a celebration of the Cape Cod Baseball League. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 866-999-4626, or you can email us at thepoint@wgbh.org. Now, Steve, you mentioned that scouts tend to come to the Cape League games, and you can see, in fact, you have a reference in your book that you could probably heat a hot dog off the number of radar guns that are going off at any one time. But talk a little bit about that. You mentioned the proximity of the fields is one of the things that attracts them.
Sure. Many of the scouts told me that not only they, but their families like, well, everybody likes to come to the Cape. Sure. For the summer, just spend 10 minutes on Route 28 some nice day. But the families, for instance, they might find a hotel in Hyannis, and the families go to the beach or the wives go shopping, as one scout said, and he gets to cover all 10 teams, and if traffic permits, he can make it from one end of the Cape to the other in a half an hour, catch two games a day, cover the territory that he's chartered to cover. You can't do that in the other leagues, which are much more spread out. Even a new one in Texas. Texas is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to cover the whole league from one vantage point in a place like that.
So this atmosphere is pretty organized, I would imagine, for the players. Are they required to sign contracts, or how is their arrangement?
The players actually do sign a commitment to the team for which they'll be playing in much the same way they commit to a college program. Because these are the premier players in the college ranks, getting them here sometimes is problematic because their teams are playing in the College World Series tournament, or they get selected for Team USA, and of course injury is always a factor too. So there is this other layer of players that are brought in on a temporary basis until the ones that have signed the commitment letter show up on Cape, and the temps come because it's an opportunity for them, and it's not at all unheard of for a temporary player to play his way onto a squad somewhere full-time for the summer.
In fact, you profiled a couple players in the book, and I think at least two of them were these so-called temporary players, where they basically were signing on and with the hopes that they would hook on with the team for the whole summer.
My favorite story that way was the second baseman for Brewster last summer, a fellow by the name of Will Rimes. Will Rimes was pre-med at William & Mary. He loved to play ball, and as he explained to me, being a ball player at William & Mary, it's not the same thing as it would be if you were at, say, Arizona State or one of the baseball factories. Being pre-med at William & Mary is a big deal. So he finds himself, through connections via his college coach, who knew some of the people on the Cape, he finds himself as a temporary player in Brewster. Plays so well, he makes the team. Plays so well, he makes the All-Star team. And stands there and tells me, "I'm living the life," he says. "I've always wanted to do this. Yeah, I want to be a doctor, but I can always go back and do that." He's one of the 25 who were drafted 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Is that really the dream of most of these players, or is this as good as it's going to get here at the Cape League?
It's hard to imagine, even after a whole summer of talking to these people, that there's anyone playing in the Cape League that doesn't aspire to the pros. There are those who know, perhaps, that they're sort of on the edge of being able to make it. And it's a very interesting conversation to have with them, who is realistic and who isn't, who understands truly how steep the climb is, who's in it much as this fellow Will Rimes. He knew he could do it, he had his opportunity to do it, and for him, and I don't wish to put words in his mouth, but my sense is, if it didn't turn out as well for him, he'd be satisfied, because at least he would have known for the 3 weeks or whatever that he was a temp in the Cape League, he held his own. And he would then be able to go become a doctor like Moonlight Graham in Field of Dreams and live.
And you mentioned that there's a bit of an adjustment, because in the college ranks, I mean, one of the examples is that they use aluminum bats, they come to the Cape, and now they have to use the wood bats. So is there a real adjustment period for the players in terms of their mechanics and playing the game?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This same Mike Costanzo that you referenced, he was actually the first-round pick for the Philadelphia Phillies this year, and he's a Philly kid, so that was extra special for him. He signed right away. He's in, last I checked, Batavia, New York, at the New York Penn League. I hope he's doing well. But he's a slugger. And I had opportunity to spend a game in the dugout with the Hyannis Mets, which was especially fun because I grew up a New York Mets fan. And I don't care, they're college kids. I'm in a dugout with Mets uniforms. Costanzo strikes out, swinging. Comes back to the dugout, slams down his helmet, and says, I saw those pitches so well, and I just couldn't hit them. And the look on his face was, I imagine, much as it is when freshmen arrive at Harvard. They've always been the cream of the crop, and now suddenly they're in a setting with everybody else's cream of the crop, too. So now they're just another guy. What he does from there is then key. How can he, or can he, adjust to the fact that he's got to work at this now to take his game to the next level? Most of them do. An exceedingly high percentage of the players on the Cape get drafted. It's astonishing.
Is that one of the things that the scouts are looking for, being able to make that shift and deal with the pressures? I mean, this is really big game situations.
It is, and it is what they're looking for. As I mentioned earlier, it's more than just the raw performance statistics. You know, batting average, on-base percentage, all the things that will govern what happens to the player once he's a professional. The scouts want to see, can they make this adjustment? Can they make the adjustment to playing pretty much a game a day? They've never done that before. It is a real grind, but compared to the minor leagues, it's no grind. Scott Pickler, the manager of the YD Red Sox, laughed one day. He said, this isn't a grind. You know, wait till they get to the South Atlantic League and they have to ride in a bus for 16 hours overnight. Bull Durham, mm-hmm. Another movie reference. That's the low minors, and that's an adjustment. This is not a grind, except compared to what they're used to, where NCAA rules fairly strictly govern how many hours per week can they practice and play. They've got to leave room for studies. As a professional, this is your course of study. So it's a different mindset. Scott Lonergan was a right-handed pitcher with Brewster last year, who conjured up the image of Groundhog Day, that Bill Murray movie. I don't know why I'm so full of movie references this morning. But he says, yeah, this is Groundhog Day. It's the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. I get up, I go be a coach at the kids' clinic, I grab some lunch, I come back, we practice. I grab a shower or whatever he does, comes back, plays the game. Comes back to the field, has some dinner, goes back to the host family, gets some sleep, gets up the next day and does it again. He does this for 44 days.
Wow.
It's very different than what they're used to.
You are listening to The Point. We're talking about Cape League baseball. I'm Paul Pernovo, sitting in for Mindy Todd. We're here with author Steve Weissman. He's written a book called Beach Chairs and Baseball Bats, a celebration of the Cape Cod Baseball League. If you'd like to join our conversation, our toll-free number is 866-999-4626, or you could email us at thepoint@wgbh.org. Now, Steve, one of the things, there are a lot of leagues around the country, and they're very competitive, but one of the things that really is unique about the Cape, it seems, is the whole idea of a family atmosphere. And right in your title, you have the words beach chairs and baseball bats. Talk a little bit about beach chairs, if you would.
Well, sure. Most of the fields, as those of us who spend time there know, are very informal. They have relatively few bleachers. It varies from field to field. But the seating of choice tends to be the beach chair, perhaps in part because that's where you've just come from, the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Go to McDonald's or someplace and come to the game. Bring a cooler, however you do it. As a title, it was pretty automatic as a thought, because you just look down one of the foul lines and that's what you see, a pile of bats by the dugout and a whole slew of beach chairs along the foul line with families sitting, enjoying. It's not at all uncommon to see people's pets running around behind the fence with all the little kids who are playing catch or doing what they're doing. And over here to the right, that's where the game goes on. You can't do that at a professional field at any level.
Sure.
You don't have the access, you don't have the intimacy. And the players themselves, it's so interesting. I don't know where it goes. Somewhere along the professional track, it seems like the gratitude and appreciation is trained out of them. Here, the players are so thrilled to be asked for autographs.
Sure.
That I think it's as much fun for them as it is for the kids. Routinely, the game ends, the gates open, kids and families go out on the field. May I have your autograph, please? And they sign for half an hour after the game. That doesn't happen anywhere else. Some of it's time pressure, but I think a lot of it is appreciation for what they're doing.
And this is an opportunity for kids to get up close and personal with a lot of players who very likely will be playing at the professional level soon.
Absolutely. And part of the fun is to try to figure out which is which. If you're a small child, it doesn't much matter. But even as a 10-year-old, my son Joshua was really taken by some of the players he got to know on the Yarmouth Dennis Red Sox, including Weymouth's Frank Hereri, who at the end of the season ended up signing and finished the summer as a professional in the Arizona Diamondbacks system. He's got a bat signed by Frank Hereri. We'd like to see Frank make it for a lot of reasons, including he's a good guy. But now all of a sudden there's Frank and 12 other guys who were in the book that my son charts on almost a daily basis. We know
isn't
people. Someone's going to make it.
We have a caller, Barbara from Barnstable. You are on the point. Good morning.
Good morning. Please ask your guest to explain the relationship between the Cape Cod Baseball League, the various farm leagues, and the minor leagues, and how each of these leagues relates to each other and to the majors. And thank you.
That's a great question. Thanks, Barbara. Well, how about it, Steve?
Well, the biggest single difference is that the Cape Cod Baseball League is wholly amateur. It's a college summer league. Players need to have NCAA eligibility or they can't play. That means if they graduate, they're done. That means if they sign a professional contract, they're done. The minor leagues can be either affiliated or non-affiliated, which means, for instance, the Pawtucket Red Sox are the top minor league affiliate of the Boston Red Sox, and the players move up the professional chain, and unless they're traded or something, end up with the parent club.
So these are truly amateurs, and when I imagine once these kids graduate from college, they're no longer eligible to play in the Cape League.
Correct, because they no longer have their college eligibility. Mm-hmm. It gets a little tricky because there are rules that govern things like, from a coaching perspective, if you're a coach, you can't coach your own college players in a summer league. And there's a case right now, a very good fellow by the name of Marshall Canosa, who coached in Falmouth last year. Marshall got a new job. He switched colleges, and because there were players from his new college on the Falmouth squad, he can't be a coach there any longer. So he's coaching at Yarmouth Dennis this season. So there are a lot of college rules to be contended with. And to a large extent, this is what the general managers and the board of directors of the individual teams deal with to make sure that they're in compliance.
Sure. Let's talk about the funding. When you can go, you can bring your beach chair to the Cape League game, and you can sit out on third baseline or wherever it might be. And there's no cost associated with it per se, but somehow this is getting funded.
It's part of what's so remarkable about this. First and foremost, the league is entirely a volunteer affair. There aren't really any salaries being paid. It's all about sponsorships from the local community, local shops, and also at a league-wide level. On average, depending on the team and the year, it may cost $75,000 to $100,000 to put a team on the field for a given summer. Donations are gladly accepted at the door when you come in. There are all kinds of raffles. The 50-50 prize is the most well-known because there is a drawing, and half the pot goes to the team, and the other half goes to some lucky winner. Any and all contributions are welcome. I can tell you, whether it's here's $40, please buy a box of balls, to here's a dinner for the kids after the game, to whatever can be provided. It's all volunteer. It's all self-funded, and it's truly remarkable that it happens at all, let alone for so long.
We're talking Cape League Baseball with author Steve Weissman. He's written a book called Beach Chairs and Baseball Bats, A Celebration of the Cape Cod Baseball League. If you'd like to join us, our toll-free number is 866-999-4626 or email thepoint@wgbh.org. Now, Steve, another connection that I find fascinating is the arrangement the players have with lodging, where they stay. Host families actually put these kids up.
They do. And this is another one of those hidden secrets, I think, that when the players come to the Cape, they do stay with a family on the Cape that has offered up a room in their home or the basement in their home or in some cases their home to one or more players or the kids and their families or whatever the arrangement happens to be. There are many, many people, apparently, with the same baseball affliction that I and my family have, who think that it's really great. There are mentorship overtones for a lot of these players. It's their first time away from home for any extended period. It's a new part of the country. They don't know people. They don't know where to go. For the host families, and if they have children, it's a wonderful experience, and it's lifelong. It's not at all unusual for the host family to be invited to the player's wedding when that day comes. It happens routinely, and it's very special. It may be 20 years later, as is the case you hear about during the annual Cape League Hall of Fame induction ceremony. It's 20 years later, they haven't really been in touch, but it's the host family that's asked by the player to come and present me for my induction.
You know, and you had several players write in their own words about their experience in the Cape League in your book, and one of the things I found fascinating was clearly they talked about the games and the competitive nature of the Cape League, but really the thing that most of them seemed to focus on was the families themselves.
And for me, it was even more than that. Of the five or six players that so eloquently articulated what it was that was special for them, they all hit the same themes. It's almost as if they copied off each other's paper.
Wow.
But they didn't. Ben Crabtree, who played for YD and is also now playing for the Texas Rangers system, Will Rimes, Chase Headley from Kituat last year, Chris Robinson, you mentioned, from Hyannis. They all talked about the same thing. The host family, it was wonderful to meet the people and to be so instantly and readily accepted. It was great to be in a new part of the country. It was great to be able to validate I can play with the best. One after the next said exactly the same thing. And as much as anything, I found that to be astonishing because they have very different backgrounds. They come from different places in the country. They have different aspirations. But there's something about the Cape League. And I imagine it's the commitment, it's what all the team volunteers and the team staff and the host, it's what they all bring to the table, because whatever else is going on, at the end of the day, it's all about the players and the game. And everything else has to wait if there are other issues.
Sure. We have another caller, Erwin, who is now in Wellfleet while he's calling. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I have an anecdote. Orleans, the Orleans Cardinals and their home team is the epitome of what your guest is writing about, because there are no seats at the Orleans field and everybody brings a beach chair or blanket, sits in grass. About 10 years ago, my son, who was then 11 years old, was watching the games. You go to Orleans games all the time, and he took a great liking to one of the players. And one of the players took a liking to him. He looked through the fence right behind first base. And they chatted before the game. And that year, the Orleans Cardinals won the Cape Cod World Series. So the player ran into the stands, grabbed my son, ran out to the field house with him after the game, and he let him celebrate with the team, drinking a little little champagne or soda and having a piece of cake, and he gave him one of his bats autographed and so forth. Well, that player turned out to be Nomar Garciaparra.
Wow. Can you imagine that? And that is the real, thanks Erwin, that's the real personal connection, Steve, that people have with the players.
No question. I'll go back to Ben Crabtree. From last summer, we arrived at the field. My son happened to be with me that day. We arrived at the field early for practice at the same instant Ben Crabtree did. Ben sees us, goes back to his car, pulls out one of his Ohio University baseball shirts, signs it, gives it to my son. Just because he happened to be there and he was a good guy and he knew we were interested.
It speaks, it sounds like, to a bit of the character of the talent. They're not only talented baseball players, but they're vetted. These are kids who are solid character people as well.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up, because that is an equal part of what the teams on the league are looking for. You must be, of course, a very high caliber player, but you need to be a high caliber person as well, or they're not interested.
We don't have much time left, but just talk real quickly, because I find it fascinating and unique to the Cape League, a little bit about the playing conditions. For instance, you can actually be fogged out of a game around here.
I was in Harwich last night, and we thought that was going to happen for a time. It is one of the things that the players, going back to the 30s, Roy Bruninghouse, who was inducted into the Cape League Hall of Fame last fall, there's an anecdote from him, and he's from Millbury, Mass., so he's a local kid, shows up on the Cape, and there's this stuff all around. And they're playing the game, and he can't understand it. He said, "What is this?" And they said, "Well, Bruni, that's fog." He said, "I don't know about you, but where I come from, this is rain." Corey Snyder, the ex-big leaguer, same story. It's one of his long-lasting takeaways playing in Harwich and Chatham.
You've been listening to The Point. We've been talking with Steve Weissman, author of Beach Chairs and Baseball Bats, a celebration of the Cape Cod Baseball League. Real quick, Steve, where can you get this book?
The shortest route to that is the website, www.theballyard.com. It's also at all 10 fields. It's at a number of bookstores up and down the Cape and on Amazon.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us. I'm Paul Pronovo, sitting in for Mindy Todd. Have a good day.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Production assistance provided by Dan Tridle and Pam Stark. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.